Welcome to the second episode of Degenerates NBA. We got 1 week basically in the books. Hathaway, what do you think of that intro music choice?
I loved it. I was just jamming out back here on my side. It was a nice mix up from what we had last week.
Yeah, song's absolute fire. I was going to say electric, but I thought it would have sounded dumb since the name of the song's Electric Feel. So pretty fire song. We'll dive right into it. Last night I bet on the Memphis Grizzlies and they lost by 50 to Curry and the Warriors. So the one thing I wanted to bring up is, since we obviously last week on the show, we made our predictions for the playoff picture and what it would look like. And my question to you is, would you change anything and move the Warriors? Did you have the Warriors first?
Yeah, I had Warriors 1.
You had Warriors 1. So I had the Warriors 2. And so I was thinking about it, if I could redo it now, would I move them in front of the Spurs? And I'm going to say no. I think it's still a little early.
Yeah.
But they look pretty amazing. But they've only played 3 games. So it's still a little early for me to say I'm going to change anything yet. But they won by 50 last night against Memphis, and then they dominated 2 games on the road against Houston and New Orleans. I don't know. What would you say, they look even more impressive than they did at the start of last year?
I think they do. I just think that the fact that they don't even have Kerr and they've got Luke Walton running the show, and Steph Curry just looks like he's somehow improving. I think they look better. Tomorrow night they play the Clippers, who are also undefeated. So that'll be kind of a nice test to see where the Western Conference sits, 2 heavyweights going at it. Honestly, like you said, I'm not a huge fan of overreacting after 1 week. So many teams have gotten new players, and it's just, you know, people are already ready to give people MVPs and the championship, and I mean, there's so many injuries, it's such a long season, no need to overreact already.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no way around saying that they have definitely been the most impressive team through the first week by, I'd say, a pretty fairly large margin. The Clippers are undefeated, but they haven't done it in the same fashion that the Warriors have. And I'll admit I was a little off on the Clippers because I thought they were going to have a hard time getting used to all this firepower to start the year. It seems like they're doing a pretty good job. That being said, I still think it's early to say anything about them also, because at some point I think they'll be tested when they get faced with a challenging situation, which hasn't come up yet. But those personalities, when things are going good, is not for me when you're going to see their problems come out. It'll be when something goes wrong. So we'll wait and see on that. But the Warriors, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a team win a game by 50 points against a quality opponent like the Grizzlies are or are supposed to be. In the NBA, you don't see games get blown out like that. I mean, you see blowouts maybe in the 20s, but usually not even much higher than 20, and they won the game by 50 points. I mean, that's one of the more impressive wins I've ever seen, and I watched most of it.
Yeah, I mean, usually like a team will – maybe jump out by 20 or 30, and then, you know, they try and rest some of the starters and sort of slips up. The other team starts going on a run, and they come back, and that's why you've seen some of these epic comebacks in the past couple of years. But last night it was just, I mean, Warriors came out, and then the Grizzlies just basically packed it in. And to hold the Grizzlies to 69 points, I mean, the Grizzlies do like to play slow, so they aren't a team that could really come back from a big win, whereas a team like the Clippers or Warriors, who has a lot of firepower, can get hot and make one of those comebacks. But still, I mean, one of the things that's jumped out to me at the beginning of the season seems to be the lack of defense just by the whole league. I mean, we know that everyone can play can score in the NBA. I mean, great offensive talents, but something that comes on a little later is defense, as teams sort of lock it down and figure out, you know, where everyone needs to be in their rotations and things like that. And right now, I mean, the Warriors have put up over 130 twice already this year.
Yeah, I mean, they've scored over 110 in every game, and it's a small sample size. But the craziest part about that one was to win by 50 points when you were – and they were trailing at the end of the first quarter, 22-21. So they went on – so through they won. They basically won the game by 51 in three quarters. Very impressive win. No way around how good the Warriors have looked this year. But it's just – like we said, it's only been a week. So I'm not going to crown them Western Conference champs, NBA champs yet. And the Spurs, the Spurs have also looked good. They've had some closer games, but they've been winning. I think Aldridge has fit in pretty well. Duncan, they said Duncan's lost some weight. And just in general with Popovich, I'm going to need to see some head-to-heads before I put the Warriors in front of the Spurs. And even the Thunder, because the Thunder have looked pretty good. Through 1 week. They lost last night. This is our next topic. The Houston Rockets lost their first three games by 20 points. Are you concerned about the Rockets or not?
I mean, honestly, I'm not a huge overreactor for the first week, but the Rockets are kind of, as a team, scare me in terms of, you know, I just don't see anyone on their team where if something goes a little bit south, like, I mean, this season, I wouldn't call it south by any means, but hasn't gone the way they wanted it to. I don't see James Harden. I don't see Dwight Howard. I definitely don't see Ty Lawson. The only person, you know, that could have done it in the past would have been someone like a Chandler Parsons or something. And, I mean, I just don't see any of those guys bringing the team together and saying, hey, you know, we need to get this thing right. Last year, there were rumors circulating that James Harden and Dwight Howard and Josh Smith were sitting at their own tables during team dinners and things like that. Like, I just think that the Rockets have great talent, and when that's going well, similar to the Clippers, things, you know, it looks great from the outside, but I just think it could be a snowball effect where if James Harden isn't hitting, they don't really have anything to right the ship, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And I was actually, it's funny, I was going to bring up the same thing about the team dinners. It was, they sat at a different table than the other guys, which is the most outrageous thing I've ever heard and such a bad look for a team. Wouldn't surprise me if Ty Lawson was at that table now that he's got that big contract. But so let's frame the question this way. Yeah, I mean, Ty Lawson's now making $12.5 million. So maybe he's made his way to that table too. So let me pose it this way. On a scale of 1 to 10, how worried are you about the Rockets moving forward this season? Because you had them finishing third in the West initially.
Right, yeah. I mean, 1 to 10, if we're saying, am I worried that they make the playoffs, I'm about a 1. I think they just have too much talent to not make the playoffs. And I think as we sort of saw last year in the West, I mean, I guess no one wants to play the Warriors, who, if my predictions are correct, and get the first seed. No one wants to play that first seed, and, I mean, everyone would like to have home court. But I think in the West, it's basically just a battle of get to the playoffs, hope your guys are hot, and, you know, you stay healthy, and then, you know, roll with the punches from there. So in that sense, am I worried about them making the playoffs? I'm at a 1, but I guess – I am worried that they would finish in the top three. I just think the West is – you don't get any days off. I think the West is too deep of a conference for any of this sort of dinner stuff. And, yeah, I think Ty Lawson definitely takes spot at that table. And you don't want your three stars they have some young guys around them. They've got Montrez, Sam Decker. And, I mean, those guys could fit in well at a team that has – you know, some actual leadership on it. So it's sort of a two-part question. I'm not worried that they make the playoffs, but I'm worried that they'll finish at the top.
That's valid. I'd say in terms of my scale of 1 to 10 worried, completely with you on the playoffs. There's absolutely no chance the Rockets don't make the playoffs. That's not even up for debate. But I'd say for in terms of the first week, I don't think I would ever go much higher than like a 5 or 6 in terms of how worried I am about a team, because it is the first week and they did beat the Oklahoma City Thunder last night. I'd say I'm about a 4. I mean, it's not really worried, but it's certainly they've underachieved. Last night was the first game Ty Lawson played well in. So that was encouraging to see if you're in the Rockets camp. The other thing is that was only Dwight Howard and Ty Lawson's second game together or something like that, maybe the third if you count preseason. So I think it might be a situation where it takes some time to gel. The big thing that worries me is how often James Harden brings the ball up when he's on the floor with Ty Lawson. Because I think one of the things Ty Lawson does the best for his team is gets the ball up the floor. And that's kind of polar opposites to what Harden likes to do. He likes to get it and bring it up really slow and not make a spectacle of himself, but you kind of know what I mean, where he likes to bring it up slow and everyone and like settle things into what, so he can see what he wants to see and go from there. So it's kind of the two ways they like to bring the ball up are really different. I think that could kind of throw off an offense, but Ty Lawson did look good. So if they can settle together and maybe Harden brings it up in the half court, and if they can outlet it to Lawson and go, which they did last night a few times, he ran an awesome fast break with Corey Brewer. So if they can figure out a way that they can have the best of both worlds there, I think they still could be that 3-4 seed. But if they play like they've been playing, I think they fall closer to the 5-6 spot. Is kind of what I was saying with my level, like a 4 level of worried. It kind of means like I kind of see them now in more of a 5-6 than a 3-4, because I had them 4th.
So I agree with that.
Yeah, and I mean I had them ahead of the Clippers. It's like maybe that's something if I was redoing it right now, maybe I'd switch them with the Clippers and move the Clippers into the 4 spot, jump the Grizzlies and Rockets. So that's something to consider. So it sounds like we're on similar page with the Rockets. We're kind of bumping them down a little bit, but it's still early. I think it's the chemistry is the whole deal for them with the players they have. Because Trevor Ariza is a really good role player. And if they can figure out a way to get Lawson and Harden working together and Dwight healthy, they're obviously formidable, but that's a lot of ifs, and I think that's what we saw in the first 3 games of the season. So, all right, it sounds like we're on the same page.
I just think that Ty Lawson, I mean, that's their main thing, is how are they going to have him fit in there? I mean, he's a great on-ball player driving to the basket, and, I mean, if they want to use it where Harden in the half court has the ball and Ty Lawson kind of spots up as a three-point shooter, so be it, but they sort of need to figure that out. And I mean, they have plenty of time, obviously. They, like you said, they beat the Thunder last night. He's shown to be a really good team. So, I mean, it just doesn't matter whether they can figure it out and how patient they're going to be.
My thing with the Rockets is, and why I am actually slightly concerned, is I don't think McHale is a great coach, and he certainly doesn't seem like the kind of coach that's going to manage personalities well, because he doesn't seem like he has a strong enough personality on his own. So I don't think he's going to be one to, like, get in Harden's face or get in Dwight's face and say, we got to work this thing out.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, if you had someone like a Steve Kerr, where it just seems like Steve Kerr just would be someone that everyone just loves to kind of gravitate around, they, you know, the team models themselves after him, that would be, like, a perfect fit with the Rockets, I think. But, I mean, first, McHale, it seems like he is just another added ego almost to the mix of already gigantic egos of Dwight Howard and James Harden, and then throw Ty Lawson shenanigans in there, and it's just like, you know, what's going to happen from here?
Yeah, and we know, because we're Carolina guys, might pay a little more attention to Lawson, but he was stuck out in Denver with a team that wasn't very good, but he had a fair share of off-the-court issues. And a lot of people might not know that because he's not one of the biggest name guys. But, I mean, he had a DUI situation. There were a few things. So don't underestimate Ty Lawson's personality affecting the already big personality of this Rockets team.
Yeah.
All right. So maybe now the more we talk about it, maybe I'm a little more worried about the Rockets. Maybe they are
easy
a team
to talk
that
yourself
gets bounced
into being
in the
worried.
first round. But that's the problem when people start talking after 1 week, is you talk yourself into things too early. On the complete opposite side of the coin of the Pistons, I mean of the Rockets, we have the Pistons, who are undefeated. And they've looked pretty good. Obviously, they haven't lost a game. They just beat the Bulls in overtime. They're going against the Pacers tonight. A game they could win. They should win at home and go to 4-0. What are your thoughts on the Pistons so far? Are they real, or do you think it's a situation whereby, you know, the middle of the season, they're already out of the playoff picture?
Honestly, I think the Pistons have looked great, and I think that they might actually be a real team. I think them losing Greg Monroe to the Bucks has been a blessing in disguise. It sort of gave the keys to Andre Drummond as a guy on the paint, and he's more than rewarded them, averaging, you know, an insane number of rebounds. I think he's averaging 16 rebounds a game, and, you know, put up a 20-20 game earlier in this, maybe the first game of the season. I think the Pistons are a kind of young team that people have slept on, and they're, you know, proving everybody wrong. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope's a great scorer. They've just got some good guys that are young people out to prove everybody wrong. One thing I'm kind of worried about, Jody Meeks, I think is going to be out for a little bit longer. He seems to be sort of like a veteran presence, kind of a glue guy. And, you know, with him out and Brynn and Jennings and everybody ready to lead the show, like, I'm not sure how that whole thing's going to play out, but we'll see.
Okay, let me pose the question to you this way. I'm looking at who you picked to make the playoffs in the East. If you could swap a team out and put the Pistons in, would you do it? And if you did do it, who would it be?
Yeah, okay, that's a tough one. Obviously, if I like my top six. So we're looking at Milwaukee or Boston as of who I would swap out. And, you know, it's easy to say right now, yes, I want to swap out the Pistons for Boston. I still like the Bucks. I think the Bucks are going to they're just a deep, young team that's similar to the Pistons, but just with a little bit more talent. And Jason Kidd's a great coach. Boston, I'm getting kind of worried about them. I think the East is a lot better than I sort of gave them East credit for. Just don't think you're going to go around and win as many games like the Celtics did last year, where people sort of took them for granted and they just ended up gobbling up a lot of free wins. So I think if I did have to say it right now, here we are overreacting after 1 week, but I think I would actually swap out the Pistons for the Celtics.
Okay. You know who's in the playoffs as of right now in the eighth spot? The New York.
Yeah. I saw that. Your Knicks.
For me, the Pistons, they look good. I don't really buy them. I wouldn't swap them out for the Celtics or Bucks. I know they've gotten off to a good start. I don't see it lasting. I know they got hot at one point last year, which, you know, they weren't very good last year. I know that Drummond is a beast. 16.3, almost 16.5 rebounds a game is extremely impressive. Far and away, the tops in the league, ahead of DeAndre and some other big-name guys. I just don't really buy the rest of their team in general. Meeks is out. I just don't know. Caldwell-Pope can score, but I don't – and I like Reggie Jackson. I thought they overpaid. I mean, $14 million a year for Reggie Jackson is a little bit ridiculous, but
yeah,
I just don't really
it
know
might not be
who's
going to –
Yeah, I thought he killed the Knicks when I went to a game, and I know he's a good talent, but, I mean, $14 million a year is ridiculous. He's making more than, other than Brandon Jennings, he's making twice as much as anyone else on the team. I just don't, I just am a little concerned where the scoring can come from. I think they've made some good moves, like Ilyasova, Jackson, Meeks a couple years ago, drafting Drummond. They're a team that's young and I think will be in the Eastern Conference playoffs in the next 2 to 3 years. It's just too early for me this year. That being said, I do like a couple of their wins. I think that win against the Hawks was impressive, because I think the Hawks are – people were ready to write off the Hawks after that loss. I mean, it was a 12-point loss at home to the Pistons. People were ready to write them off. Since then, they haven't lost. So that win was impressive. And beating the Bulls, obviously, in overtime is impressive. But I think these young teams early in the season can shine through with their talent. For me, it's we're going to find out when they go on the big road trips, and they get into one right away. They play the Pacers tonight, but then Friday they start a six-game road trip. So we'll see what they're made of. They have to go to Golden State. They have to go to Phoenix. They have to go to the Clippers. So we'll see. I think you will be able to tell fairly early if they're for real, because after that road trip, then they got the Cavs. And I think at that point we'll be able to figure out if the Pistons are for real, but it's too early for me right now to say they're going to make the playoffs.
I think that the way the Pistons are going to go this year, and, you know, it's a lot to heap on his shoulders, but I think Stanley Johnson is going to sort of take them as far as they can go. I mean, they're good at the point guard. They've got in the guards. They've got, you know, Reggie Jackson, Brandon Jennings. You know, it's not the greatest. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope in there. I mean, that's a serviceable, if not good, backcourt. And then Andre Drummond can go up against any big guy in the East. And, you know, but the problem is going to be is who's going to guard LeBron? Who's going to guard Carmelo? Who's going to guard Jimmy Butler? Who's going to guard those players on the team, on these teams? Who's going to guard Greek Freak? Like, you need to know who's going to be their kind of guy, and that's going to come down to Stanley Johnson, and they're going to have to be able to stop those guys in the fourth quarter. And, you know, the Wizards couldn't do that against the Knicks. Again, with Melo took them to school, and you're going to need to have a guy who can stop the big players who are going to have the balls in their hand. And the East is loaded at the small forward position.
Yeah, I mean, the small forward position in general across the NBA is – a few years now, it's been kind of the most dynamic position. I mean, Stanley Johnson is a tremendous talent, but shooting 32% from the field, it seems like he's gotten he's still not really used to playing at this level. He was amazing at Arizona, and I think he could be really good, but he hasn't looked that comfortable in the brief minutes I've seen him. I only saw him against the Hawks. But he didn't look that comfortable to me. He is a tremendous athlete, so I don't doubt that he could be a good defender. But that's a tough position to have to defend just across the league. So if he's their kind of going to be their guy, I'd say that's a little worrisome. But we'll see. I mean, Drummond, I think, is a bona fide stud. Drummond, I wouldn't shock me at all. I would take it to the bank that Drummond makes the All-Star team this year.
Yeah,
because
I think
you
if
look
he's putting
at
up these numbers,
Eastern
he has
conference,
to.
Yeah, if you look and you look at the Eastern Conference, there aren't a ton of good centers. I mean, the Bulls have, you know, Powell started the All-Star game last year and Noah. But then outside of that, who is there? Who makes it over Drummond?
Yeah.
I wouldn't surprise me if he started the game. So,
yeah,
that's big for them. But it's too early for me. If they have a good road trip, I might put them in ahead of the Bucks. Mostly because of what the Knicks did to the Bucks. I can get delusional about the Knicks when we're decent, but not that good. But I know this Knicks team isn't that good. We're 2-2. We've played some good games, but I know we're not good. And we stomped the Bucks in Milwaukee. And I know it was the first game of the season, but first game of the season is not the worst indicator in the world because everyone's fired up. Everyone's fresh. So if there's a team for me, we had the same eight teams in different order. I had the Bucks in the eight spot. If there's a team for me right now that I would take out and put the Pistons in, it would be the Bucks. And I think I might consider doing that. But it's, you know, sort of. Next thing, another struggling team. We're kind of bouncing forth between the good and the bad. The Lakers, your boy Kobe Bryant, basically was told to leave practice because he was so mad at how he's been playing. They're 0-3. You might have gone deeper into this because you're a huge Kobe guy. What are your thoughts on this situation and the Lakers in general?
Yeah, I mean, Kobe's come out and been all over the sound bites this year. And, you know, I don't know if I really like that part of Kobe. It seems like in the past he's sort of shied away from being like the big quote guy, but he's already come out and said, you know, I need to just step back and let Julius Randle and D'Angelo Russell take over the game. Like, I need to pick my spots. It's time for other guys. And then here he is a week after saying that, and it's all, you know, I missed shots. I'm the 200th best player in the league, and I can't even be in practice. I'm so angry. So, you know, I don't really know, like, did he come into the season thinking that they were going to be an amazing team? Does he think that he's going to be going out and putting up numbers he did when he was 25? I don't really know why he's so upset. It seems like he's always done a pretty good job of, I mean, we all know how competitive he is and just that fire and edge he's got, but he's always done a pretty good job of keeping that sort of bottled up inside and harnessing it in the right way. And it just seems like all these injuries and these young players are sort of causing him to boil over. And if they don't sort of get this right, and he sort of take on a different mentality of sort of a Paul Pierce mentor kind of guy, the Lakers could be in trouble this year.
Yeah, I mean, I saw someone, I don't remember which analyst it was, and there's a lot of talking heads that say really dumb things. But I saw someone on ESPN had the Lakers making the playoffs, and that's the craziest thing I've ever heard. The Lakers have no chance of making the playoffs. I think they're going to have a top five, maybe top three pick again this year. What I really was hoping to see out of Kobe, before he got hurt last year, there were a few games where he had big assist numbers. And so I thought from what he was saying at the start of the year that that was kind of going to be more the role he would play. And it's really just been him trying to play like he did when he was the leading scorer in the league and just not being good enough to execute. He takes 17 shots a game. I mean, and Melo does the same thing. So I'm not, you know, saying anything crazy about guys like that shouldn't take a lot of shots. But it just wasn't what he was preaching before the season started. And on that 17 shots a game, he's shooting 31% from the field. That's really, really, really bad. That's not, you know, you're not going to be good like that. They don't have another guy on that team to make up for Kobe playing this poorly. His player efficiency rating is 14.3. It's one of the worst on the team. And I'm sure on the lower end of the league. So for me, it's if he doesn't change, they're going to be the worst team in the NBA potentially. Because if they're going to let – the thing with Byron Scott is he's shown a blind loyalty to Kobe Bryant. And so if he lets Kobe just keep doing this all season long, it's going to be really hard for them to win many games. This year, Melo – is averaging 19 shots a game, shooting 37%. Still not good, but his player efficiency rating is 23.1. It was much higher than Kobe's. And Melo, from what I've seen, other than the Wizards game, has played really badly. So if that's the position Kobe's putting his team in, because these two teams aren't that different. The Lakers and Knicks are in very similar spots. They had the second pick in the draft. We had the third. We have a lot of – you can watch the game at any point and not know a single guy in the lineup. And one former scoring champion / you know, MVP, All-NBA, and a lot of other guys. And Carmelo's been a lot better than Kobe, but he's still been pretty bad. So if those two guys continue to play the way they've been playing, where they get up, you know, between 15 and 20 shots a game and shoot under 40% from the field, the Knicks and Lakers could find themselves in the top three draft picks again.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Lakers, honestly, it's unfair. I mean, I think they've got some good talent around them. I think Jordan Clarkson's a great player. Julius Randle and D'Angelo Russell, you know, the Knicks got unlucky and had to take Kristaps, although if I was a Knicks fan, I wouldn't be too disappointed with what I've seen from him so far. But, I mean,
it's been good.
The Lakers, listen here, Kobe is shooting around 10 threes a game, which is almost double what he's done for his whole career. And so that, in my opinion, does show a little bit of more. He's trying to be on the wings, spot up, trying to change his game a little bit. Yes, he's still shooting a ton. Yes, he gets the ball and tries to force it and do his, you know, pivot fadeaways and what have you. But he is sort of trying, it looks like, to – I've only watched one game. Granted, they're on every single night. Lakers could be playing the Magic and they'd have a primetime game. But, and I mean, so that is
they're
somewhat
on tonight
positive.
Against the Nuggets.
Yeah, like, I just, like, that doesn't, the Wizards and the Wizards couldn't get a primetime game if they're playing, I mean, well, anyway, that's a whole other debate. But I think the fact that he's sort of shooting more threes and trying to be a little more spot up, I think that is somewhat promising. I think those are the shots that he's really upset about, is he's missing open threes. But and once he starts making those and he could open up the floor for D'Angelo Russell and the paint for Julius Randle, I think they could get this all back on track. For, I mean, whatever you want to say on track is, I mean, I still don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but if they could just, you know, Hibbert could be decent, be a defensive presence, and, you know, have D'Angelo Russell and Julius Randle look good as, like, the next guys, I think that would be a successful season for the Lakers. And if Kobe can show that he can sort of guide them in that way, and, you know, I mean, I keep going back to it, but I think Paul Pierce is one of the best players in terms of what we've seen him transform his game into and being the mentor. And, I mean, it might just be being in D.C., but John Wall and Bradley Beal constantly go back to how much Paul Pierce taught them and just about, you know, off-the-court things and whatever. But it seems like Kobe, you know, if I was a young player, I would love to just go in and pick his brain and see how he works. And, you know, so if they can do anything like that to show some form of success where he's not in the spotlight every single day for some other thing about him being mad or some soundbite of him, I think it's a successful season.
Yeah, I'm with you. If I'm a Lakers fan, I would get the playoffs out of my head right now, because I could understand. I've been the delusional fan that's, you know, like we've said, you know, you can look at your roster long enough in the off season to convince yourself you can make the playoffs, especially in the East. But, and it wouldn't surprise me if there's some Lakers fans that are like, all right, if Kobe's back and D'Angelo Russell's like a really effective point guard right off the bat, and we got Hibbert and Brandon Bass, like Nick Young coming off the bench, like that's a decent roster. Like, we could be good this year. I'm not blaming any fan who thinks that way, because I've done that with the Knicks before. But now, after three games, it's time to get past that and realize what you were just saying. This season's going to be successful if Julius Randle and D'Angelo Russell grow a lot and can be two cornerstones of this team for the next decade. That's what's going to be an effective team. And that's what you should consider a good year. Get, like, you know, basically if those two guys can have good seasons and develop their games a lot, and you can have another good draft pick, you could be looking at having a very good team, you know, 5 years down the road. It's just tough as a fan to suffer through seasons after season being, like, you know, building. No one likes to build. It's not fun to blow up your team and wait on the sidelines and during the postseason for 5-10 years, even though you might know that you're going to be good. That being said, it's kind of a perfect transition into our next thing, which is the rookies and how well some of them have been playing and have had an immediate impact. Because a lot of times rookies don't have immediate impacts. Some years it's a struggle to find a rookie of the year, like when Carter Williams got it. He didn't have a great year, but no one else did either. So it's surprising when you have rookies come in and make an impact right away. We've seen it a couple times throughout the first week of the season. So our two picks, we were on the exact same page. It was Okafor's probably got the best chance, dark horse being Moutier. Okafor's averaging 20 points a game, so I think that's pretty impressive. I don't, for a rookie to average 20 points a game, even though it's been only 1 week. I've watched some of their games because I took them last night against the Cavs, and they covered easily. They lost by 7, and he banks. He doesn't look like a rookie. He went right into the chest of Kevin Love, got to the rack, used his size, used his talent. So he's looked really good. We were right on it there. Have you watched any of him live?
Yeah, I've watched him, sort of exactly why one of the reasons I picked him, other than the fact that the Sixers just absolutely have no one else, so they would love to just feed him 100 touches a game, is that the way he played in college was he just came in and looked like he had been playing college basketball for, you know, 10 years and had the body already that could just go right in the NBA and do the same thing again. And it's, you know, he's doing that. You know, one thing that I did will say I slept on and is sort of a kind of a threat to our picks is Karl Anthony Towns has been amazing. I mean, he going out in Minnesota and then, you know, behind Wiggins and some of those guys, not going to get as much notice, but he's putting up almost 18 points and 10 rebounds. And those are all-star numbers pretty much.
Almost three blocks a game too.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just think he's up there where, you know, if you did a redraft right now, he still would be the number one pick. I mean, you could say that the T-Wolves are a little bit of a better team than the Sixers. Yeah, I mean, but we also made the point that helped Jahlil and Moody. So, I mean, yes, it's really early. I don't anticipate Karl Anthony Towns finishing with those numbers, I don't think. And that people always talk about sort of that wall that rookies hit for how long the NBA season is. So that's sort of something to watch out for, seeing as all these guys that we've picked have only done a season where they've played more than about 20 games one time, and now they're about to go and play 82 games. So it'll be, I mean, honestly, right now it seems like it'll be sort of who can stay healthy, who, you know, can Okafor, do we have to worry about him staying in shape or being in shape, if that affects him. But yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right about staying in shape too, because in terms of that and staying healthy, I would give the edge to Towns. He's a physical specimen, and not that Okafor isn't, but Towns is a little bit more of an athletic guy and not as much of a finesse player. But I mean, you're absolutely spot on. I mean, he's as second scoring on the Timberwolves, almost 18 a game, you know, 10.3 boards, almost three blocks. Those are ridiculous numbers for a rookie. And both him and Okafor are shooting well over 50% from the field. The thing that's really impressed me about Okafor is, even though it is only three games, he's shooting 77% from the line, which, you know, obviously we know from his college days is well above what he shot at Duke, where he was more around mm-hmm. the 50% number. So now he's close to 80%. I mean, and that's, you know, he's shooting 4.5 a game. So it's a small sample size, but that's not, you know, he's taken, that means he's taken almost 15 free throws, and he's hit almost 80% of them. So to me, says that he worked really hard on it in the off season. And it seems like he's the kind of guy who is a really hard worker, because he had to be with his body in high school. He must, you know, he dominated, no question about it. But beyond that, he worked on developing his post moves. And so that when he got to college, he was that much better. He was already above the level of everyone else around him. And he still had the big body and the perfect, you know, but he also had amazing post moves. So, and now he's worked on his free throws. It seems like a guy to me where he keeps adding things to his game, and he's only in his first year in the league. And that's something a lot of NBA guys talk about, is in the off season trying to add one move or add one piece to the game. And it seems like Okafor has been doing that for a long time. So obviously that isn't as relevant in the rookie of the year conversation, but just in the conversation we're talking about now of how effective rookies have been right off the bat, you know, that's a reason why I'd say for Okafor. And it's certainly a good sign if you're a Sixers fan moving forward, if he can continue to do that. But I would say, right now, if there was a redraft, 1,000%, everyone would stick with their guys. But Moutier has been pretty impressive for the Nuggets. Also almost 13 points a game, 5.5 assists. It's not as crazy. The numbers aren't, you know, as ridiculous as they are for Towns and Okafor. And I think anybody who was really, you know, gun to head, life on the line, I think basically everyone would have picked Okafor or Towns. Moutier was more of a dark horse guy, but those numbers aren't bad either.
No. No, they're not. And I mean, I think one of the biggest things is just how great the top, you know, lottery of this draft was. I mean, there are guys who are coming in, they're starting on their teams. I think Oubre might be, I might just make this up, but Oubre might be the only guy who isn't starting on in the lottery on his team this year. I mean, D'Angelo Russell is doing well. I mean, obviously, as a point guard, you got to have more than one assist a game. But Moutier has had flashes of his game. Justice Winslow has a couple highlights. You know, Willie Cauley-Stein is one of the biggest surprises, in my opinion. I would have never guessed he's averaging 9 points a game after four games in the league. Like, the guy could barely put the ball in the basket in college. So, I mean, I just think that this whole rookie class is so great. And whoever wins it, I mean, this is going to be one of the toughest rookie awards to win in years that I can remember in a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, Cauley-Stein actually leads the NBA in field goal percentage. He's shooting like 73% from the field. Granted, I mean, probably hasn't taken a shot outside the paint, but I was not expecting Cauley-Stein to be effective in the NBA. But, you know, it's just this draft class is so impressive. And so beyond those guys, we brought him up earlier. Porzingis has been pretty good. He started all four games for the Knicks. He's the second leading scorer, 12 points, 8.5 boards, a block a game. He's looked pretty good. I mean, you know, nothing like Towns or Okafor, but he's looked better than I was expecting him to look, and I'm excited about him moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, if you did a redraft, and I mean, while I like Justice Winslow, and that's who, if I was a Knicks fan, and I've always sort of had a soft spot for the Knicks just because of Carmelo, but I mean, Justice was the guy who I was like, oh, that's who I really would have wanted. But I mean, Porzingis has looked pretty, I mean, I think he's looked great, and he's a dynamic guy. It looks like he's transitioning well into the NBA game, and, you know, still a young, really young guy. I mean, I've liked what I've seen from Kristaps.
Yeah, I mean, the whole time we were leading up to the draft, I wanted to go with Winslow or Moutier. I kind of had a sneaky suspicion we were going to go with Porzingis, and I was like very adamantly, vehemently against drafting Porzingis. I hate drafting these guys out of Europe. I feel like everyone expects them to be the next Dirk, just because they're tall and can shoot. But it's so rare that actually happens. We saw it when Bargnani went first overall, and we've seen it a few other times. So I didn't like it, but he's through three games. I'm not saying I'm completely 180'd and now really excited that we picked him over a guy like Moutier, but I'm coming around. I mean, he's 7'1", and he looks like he runs the floor pretty well and – is, you know, can take the ball to the rim better than I was expecting. So from that point of view, I'm okay. I'm coming around. I don't love it, but I'm coming around. I mean, if you had told me he was going to average 12 and 8.5, and if he, let's say, I mean, on ESPN has him listed at 7'3". So
yeah,
the guy
which is
huge.
Ridiculous.
So if you told me, and right now, if you could tell me, he would average on the season 12 and 8.5, I would have been all for taking him fourth overall.
With some of those highlight reels, you know, that he's throwing down. That, I mean, that dunk that he had on the putback on Melo's shot the other night was something that, I mean, I watched that like five times just making sure I saw it right. I mean, granted, he doesn't have to jump very high, but still, I saw him live, and the guy you could – looking, you couldn't find the fifth guy on the court because he's just so thin. He just blends in. You see right through him. But I mean, the guy still has managed to get to the basket. He's looks to be comfortable in his body as far as being 7 feet, 7'10", whatever he is. And it just seems like he's transitioning to the NBA a lot better than I thought he would. I thought he'd get pushed around a little bit, and it looks like that's not going to be the case.
Yeah, I mean, he is 1 for 9 from three, which I'd like to see him be able to make himself a real threat, because that's really one of the things that'll be important for the Knicks. If he can stretch the floor and give Melo a little more room to operate, because Melo does require a decent amount of room to operate at the offensive end of the floor. He likes to be able to go anywhere because he has an array of moves. I feel like a lot of times he doesn't really know what he wants to do until it happens, and it can get really clustered in the middle. And so if we can have a guy who can defend a power forward and get rebounds at the defensive end and stretch the floor at the offensive end, then, you know, that would be a huge asset for the team. But he's only 1 for 9 from three on the season. So obviously he took 5 against the Spurs after not attempting one. In the opener, he went 1 for 2. But then he went 0 for 4 against the Hawks and didn't take one against the Wizards. So to me, that shows me it's a young guy who gets, you know, maybe he was a little gun shy after going 0 for 4 against the Hawks, and then against the Wizards doesn't attempt one. And then it looks like they gave him some confidence, so he put up 5 against the Spurs. I think it's going to be a thing with him where you need to keep him confident and keep him shooting, because it looks good. His stroke looks good. He looks really good from the free throw line, which is, you know, he shoots 84% from the free throw line, and that's usually a pretty good indicator if someone's a good shooter or not. So if we can get him confident from three, then he could have a really effective rookie season. The problem for me is I'm in that awkward middle ground, and I'd like to have your take on this. But it's like, I don't think we will make the playoffs. Maybe we could grab the 8th spot if we played really well and Melo had a good season. Maybe at the highest, the 7th spot. Would you even want that, or would you want to be lower and get another good draft pick?
Well, I mean, it's so early in the college season, and I think if we had the same draft class that we did this past year, I would not want to make the playoffs, and I'd want to get one of those, another Porzingis young guy. But I think right now it seems what sort of everyone else looking from the outside looking in is wondering is sort of right now Melo is what's giving you guys the chance to win games. But then, you know, Phil Jackson goes and gets Porzingis, who it's like, this guy's going to be a project down the road. It sort of seems like you guys are trying to do a little bit of both. Like we'll hang on and, you know, pick up guys like Derek Williams and, you know, hold on to Calderon and whatnot. But it's like, you know, you traded to get Jerian Grant. It's like, are you guys trying to rebuild, or are you guys trying to, you know, build around Melo and keep him happy? So in that sense, I don't really know. I think you have to go all in on one way or the other. And right now it looks like you're closer to rebuilding. So I would not want to, I don't think I would want to make the playoffs. You know, I just think right now, even as a Wizards fan, it's like we'll make the playoffs, and, you know, we just have to hope that Cleveland or something happens to Cleveland or we just for some reason catch fire. But, you know, other than that, it's just like, you know, right now it's Cleveland's to lose pretty much. So even by making the playoffs, like, I guess you guys are happy if you get bounced in the first round by the Bulls or Cleveland or whoever you would play. So, you know, it seems sort of like you guys are building for rebuilding, but then you'll go out and, like, do things that sort of make people scratch their head.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Like, you're basically saying we're kind of in a no man's land with what we're trying to do. The thing is, we got kind of pigeonholed right when Phil Jackson got there. Melo was coming off a really good season, and he was a big-name free agent. And so we kind of had to re-sign him, and everyone wanted to re-sign him, but there wasn't a lot going on around him. It was kind of the whole time we were looking toward attacking the free agent market. And then that first year, we had such a bad season that it's not the city, obviously, it's a desirable location, but the team became undesirable to free agents. And so
it was almost a non-starter
even talking about going to the Knicks. And now we've kind of ended up in this no man's land where we haven't gotten any free agents, but we've had a couple bad seasons. So we've gotten some decent draft picks and we're still kind of in this spot. And I'm with you. No one wants Melo, but I think if we could trade Melo for some draft picks, I bet we would dump his contract and start completely from scratch. But we kind of got put in no man's land. So I don't think it's Phil Jackson's fault, because he was kind of put in this situation by having to give Melo that long-term deal right basically on the first day he got the job. Or in the first couple of months he had the job, he had to give Melo this long-term deal. And now it's in a situation where no one really wants Melo because it's tough to take on that contract. So I'm not blaming him, because I don't know what I would have done differently. But I think, to answer my original question, I would rather us not finish in the 7 or 8 spot, because I don't think that really does anything for us. I don't care about seeing my team get swept in the first round. I'd rather just be a bystander, you know?
Yeah. I may have just talked myself into reversing and thinking, if you're a free agent with all these free agents coming up, and you know it's New York City, you see some young guys and you see Carmelo and you see a chance to play in Madison Square Garden for 41 games of the year, and you see that the team is 7 or 8 seed and they can do that without you. I'm not saying I'm thinking of what Kevin Durant, because I don't, you know, obviously he's going to DC, but I just think if you're a free agent and you're looking at this Knicks team and they can somehow squeak to the playoffs, it's like, what could I go do this with some of these young guys? And I think that's sort of what you have to hope for, that you guys can have a good season. Like, if I were you guys, I wouldn't want to have just be the bottom of the pit and everyone talking bad, because I think that really hurts your free agent chance. But if you guys could go and sort of have like a great, you know, a decent season, and then, I mean, I don't know if he'd leave, but someone like a Harrison Barnes, you guys could pick up someone like that. I mean, I think with all the free agents, you guys kind of want to be as inviting to an outside player as you can, while also wanting to get a draft pick. Does that make sense? So even if you're not a 7 or 8, you don't want to be the like on PTI every day, like, what's wrong with the Knicks? Even if that means you get like a top 3 pick, I think you guys want to be more like hovering near the playoffs, or like, you know, worst lottery.
Yeah. That's a very valid point. I mean, you have a much better chance at getting, and that's kind of essentially what I said earlier was hurt us, was the fact that we were so bad, it became a situation no one wanted to be a part of. So I agree with you. If we have some good young talent and made the playoffs, it would be a much more desirable situation to a free agent. Because in general, free agents don't want to go to a team that won't at least make the playoffs. So, I mean, we've seen it with a bunch of teams in the past few years, and the Knicks are one of them. I mean, even the Lakers have had a tough time. They got Dwight, and they immediately got rid of him. Those aren't even really necessarily – and they got, like, Steve Nash, but he was already, like, 100 years old at that point. You see the teams – like, you saw the Mavericks got, like, Parsons, because they're a team that makes the playoffs, but they still weren't a contender. So I think you're right. If you want to get the real big-name free agent, I think it is important to be at least in playoff contention. Because self-respecting basketball player wants to, you know, be on the sidelines during the playoffs every year. So that's a good point. And that's kind of what got us here, was being so bad that no one wanted to come. So that makes sense. I'll go with you on that. That's it for the conversations. Now we're going to go into our last thing, our best bet. And mine is the Hawks +4. They're playing Miami, who I like as a team. I think they're a good team. I think they're going to get the 6th seed in the East. They've looked good thus far, but I think the Hawks are still a really good team. I wouldn't be – like, if we were changing playoff predictions around, I wouldn't be opposed to moving the Hawks up above the Wizards, which I didn't originally have. They lost to the Pistons on opening night, but the Pistons have proved to be pretty good so far. And I think the Hawks are still a really good team. And I think the way they play is going to give the Heat some problems. Really well coached team. I think they win outright on the road. And I got 4 points on top of that. So that's my best bet.
Yeah. Right now I'm going full in. After watching the Magic play against the Wizards and somehow they blew that game, I really like Orlando plus +5. They're playing New Orleans. New Orleans, I have them in my West playoffs, and they've been just disappointing. Both teams are 0-3. New Orleans is just a much more disappointing 0-3. In the West, you can't start out 0-3 if you're going to make the playoffs when you're the Pelicans. It's fine when you're the Rockets or whoever, when you have that talent, but New Orleans has to sort of win those gritty games. And the Magic just have a young team. I really like what Oladipo's done this year. Fournier, I just think they've got some good talent around them. I think Orlando goes into New Orleans, and I think they can cover a 5-point spread against the Pelicans. Because they've been so close to wins. I mean, I was watching them play the Wizards. I was so upset because I thought the Wizards were going to lose their opening game and just how disgusting the Wizards looked against the Magic. But somehow they pulled it out. Classic Wizards. But, I like the Magic tonight.
Yep, I'm also on the Magic. Pelicans have had a tough schedule so far. I think they've had to play the Warriors twice, but didn't look good in either game. I'm on the Magic. I think the Magic actually are a team. I mean, they're obviously 0-3, so it sounds kind of absurd to say this, but I don't think they're that bad.
No,
they have good young guys like Moutier, Oladipo, Tobias Harris. I think they could be a team that at some point during the season gets hot and will definitely make a fight for one of those last couple playoff spots in the East.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Mario Azonja looked pretty good. I mean, people were talking about him as, like, the next Kobe coming out of Europe. He's the reason that they lost the game, just because of how aggressive he was. But, I mean, he's the kind of guy where they just have so many young guys who love basketball so much, and you can tell watching their games that these guys are just crazy about basketball. And, you know, Oladipo, I think, is one of the more underrated players in the NBA. After, all the stories that came out of USA Basketball when Oladipo would sort of would hang around Durant and Harden and Paul George, all those guys when they were going one-on-one, I just think Oladipo is a great guy. He's, going to be one of the next big superstars in the NBA.
I don't disagree with you there. He's, obviously had the athleticism the whole time, but he's really developed a lot of other pieces of his game. I think in 5 years we're seeing Oladipo as a regular in the All-Star game. So that's going to do it for the show. Best bets are I have the Hawks plus +4 on the road. Hathaway has the Magic plus +5 in New Orleans. That's it for the show. Tune in next week. We're going to do it every week, Tuesday nights around this time. Hopefully we might start with the best bets. So if you listen live, you don't miss a game, because I'm noticing now that the Hawks Heat game has already started, but it'll be probably every Tuesday at 7:00. Thanks for listening.